This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
Thanks for tuning in, and we're very glad to have Dr. Mark Thornton with us today. Mark is senior fellow at the Mises Institute. He's the author of such books as The Economics of Prohibition and The Economics of the Civil War. He's a columnist for LouRockwell.com and an expert on the business cycle. And Mark, I was noticing just recently people taking note of the fact that exactly as apparently has happened in previous business cycles, women's hems have fallen dramatically in the last year in Paris and in London and where the big fashion shows go on. This is correlated, I guess, with business cycle troubles with recessions and depressions. A lot of people have talked about that. Seems to me you're the only person to have talked about what I'll call the Thornton Skyscraper Index for determining where we are in the business cycle and what might happen. Would you explain that to us?
Sure. Well, Lou, it's great to be here today with you to discuss the Skyscraper Index. It's really a phenomenon where record-setting skyscrapers coincide with great economic downturns in the world economy. And it seems like it's one of these fuzzy indicator type of things like hemlines and who wins the Super Bowl. But actually, it's been a very good predictor of world economic decline. And every time there's a new record-setting skyscraper in the world, there is a worldwide economic depression. And that's held true basically throughout the 20th century. There's good evidence that existed in the 19th century, and it's looking like the Skyscraper Index is going to hold up in the 21st century as well.
Well, can you give us some specific examples? Maybe even start with the 19th century if you have statistics, or certainly as early as you can go in the 20th century.
Well, in the 19th century, at the end of the 19th century, the record-setting high buildings coincided with various panics of the late 19th century. And then when we get into the 20th century, really the era of the skyscraper, where the skyscraper became the quintessential feature of American capitalism, we see the Metropolitan Life Building and the Singer Building setting records right around the Panic of 1907. The Woolworth Building was completed, set a new record in 1913, right before World War I, and of course the coming of the Fed. 40 Wall Street set the record starting in 1928, and then the Chrysler Building was started in 1929, along with the Empire State Building, three new records. Where the buildings were started before the economic downturn takes place, and then you get the crash in the stock market, then you get the beginning of the depression, and then the buildings are completed. And then we go a long period of time of relative stability in the American economy, and then you see the World Trade Towers and the Sears Building in Chicago setting new records in the early 1970s, setting the stage for the stagflation of the 1970s, one of the world's major economic downturns with both high rates of inflation and high rates of unemployment. And then more recently, we had the Petronas Towers in Kuala Lumpur and Taipei 101 in China, both indicating the onset of the tech meltdown and the Asian contagion. And right now, in 2008, the Dubai Tower has not been completed, but it has set the world's record of the world's tallest building in the Middle East. And so that's the first skyscraper index indicator of the 21st century.
Mark, you mentioned this is not the same as the hems of women's dresses. Then the fact that it's not the same, could that have something to do with the great criminal enterprise in the world economy that is central banking and especially the work of the Federal Reserve?
Well, it's absolutely tied to the Federal Reserve in the 20th century, but it's fractional reserve banking in general, pushed, controlled, and monopolized by the Federal Reserve System and their ability to create massive booms in the business cycle. And these record-setting skyscrapers basically take place because the Federal Reserve sets interest rates too low, below market rates. This expands the availability of credit. It increases the amount of speculation. Markets are booming. People believe that they can do no wrong. And so they build ever higher. And there's a lot of good economic reasons to build high buildings. And all of these reasons, these economic rationales, such as the price of land in downtown areas, the size of firms in the economies, and so on, marketing headquarters, all of these reasons coincide with the massive increase in the availability of credit, the unnatural availability and abundance of credit that's created by the Federal Reserves that causes these buildings to rise from the ground and reach into the sky. And of course, right now, we see this phenomenon taking place, not just in the Middle East, but also in China and the United States and elsewhere. People are building or are planning to build record-setting skyscrapers all over the globe.
It's fascinating, but Mark, you mentioned one of my favorite other topics, fractional reserve banking. You want to talk to us about why, you know, it's not only IndyMac, but really the entire banking system is as fragile as it is. Why is it that the whole thing is actually subject to coming down at any moment? Talk to us about fractional reserves and current economic troubles.
Well, fractional reserve banking is absolutely the foundation of the credit expansion, the ability of banks to expand the amount of available credit based on the amount of deposits that they have. And with fractional reserve banking, banks only have to hold a small fraction of their deposits on reserve. So our money really isn't in the bank. It's been lent out and re-lent out, and it's really a pyramiding of the money supply upon what we think is our deposits. But our money really isn't in these banks that we think it is. It's out there in the economy and being used to create the bubbles, to create the boom, to build these ever higher skyscrapers. And so while it appears to be a solid foundation, it's actually a very unsound economic foundation that fractional reserve banking creates. And ultimately, it all comes crashing down upon itself.
You know, I was interested to hear the reports after the whole Y2K hysteria that Alan Greenspan and the Fed had printed up an extra $50 billion in currency and distributed it around the country just in case there were a panic and people wanted cash out of their banks. I wonder if they've kept that $50 billion. I wonder if they've increased the amount of cash that they've printed and, of course, have an effect on prices and other bad effects in the economy if they do inject that much more cash.
Well, the Fed knows there's a big problem, and they're ready for everything. They've already, in 2008, given themselves extraordinary power. They've exercised that power in ways that they've never done before, you know, lending money to these tremendous credit lines that they've created for Wall Street in excess of a couple of hundred billions of dollars. But, you know, with the fractional reserve banking system and with these bank failures mounting, IndyMac was the third largest bank failure ever. The federal government admits that it expects 150 bank failures this year. I expect that number to be considerably higher than that. And we have to remember that the size of banks, due to the consolidation and the buying up of each other, that the banks are actually much larger and cover much broader economic areas. And so, the main sign of this, when the reality hits of IndyMac going under, we see long lines of people at the bank looking to get their cash out. And, you know, and that's what we will be talking about in the rest of 2008 and 2009 and possibly beyond, is these banks going under due to the fact that they've lent out so much money into this real estate bubble. And, of course, that's where the ultimate problem arises. It's home foreclosures. It's commercial real estate foreclosures. It's these giant skyscrapers that can't find tenants. And whether it's a one-story house or a 150-story building, they've built too much real estate. And the Federal Reserve has engineered this bubble, and it's going to now it's facing the unwinding of that. And with fractional reserve banking, the problem multiplies itself because there simply isn't the money in the bank. And that's really the big problem, and it's the feature of the bust that we are probably going to be looking at for the next year or so.
You know, Mark helps me lead into what's going to be a constant theme of this program. It's a good idea to have some of your assets outside the banking system in a crisis like this, whether that's gold that you hold yourself or just merely cash. It's a good idea not to have all your liquid funds in the banking system. Dr. Mark Thornton, I want to thank you for being with us here today. If you want to read Mark's archives of his articles at lewrockwell.com, which I highly recommend, and we'll give you some indication of just how right Mark has been and why I think he's right now with the Thornton Skyscraper Index, and also take a look at his books, The Economics of Prohibition, the U.S., of course, long history of prohibiting all kinds of substances that people would like to take, whether it's alcohol in the 1920s, drugs today, various prescription drugs, too, that the Food and Drug Administration won't allow to be sold in this country. Mark makes a great case for the free market as against prohibition. Also take a look at his book on the economics of the Civil War. And Dr. Mark Thornton, thanks very much.
Thank you, Lou.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by LouRockwell.com, the best-read libertarian website in the world. If you'd like to advertise on this podcast or on the website, email advertise@LouRockwell.com. And thanks for listening.